I don't think any of us are surprised to know that sin sells. We understand that there is a temptation for sin, or otherwise we would have no struggles with it. But yet sin is appealing. And what we find oftentimes is that advertisers will make a real play on that. And they'll use some kind of sinful image or sinful desire in order to make their product sound much more attractive. But I think we could take it a step further from saying simply that sin sells to say that Satan sells. Now that may be somewhat unusual to think about, but nonetheless we understand that there are occasions when there are those who lend themselves to the ideas not just of sin, but to the ideas of Satan himself in order to make their product very appealing. And while we have found that in several different areas, we find it in television, we find it in movies, even increasing in that regard. But one area where we have seen it fairly consistently for the past several years is in the area of music. In the 1970s and even the early 1980s, there were those who kind of pioneered what we might call satanic marketing, where they were making themselves associates with Satan in order to kind of achieve that level, that edge, that would make people seem somewhat interested in their product. If you go back to that era, you can think about groups such as Black Sabbath or Motley Crue or Kiss, or those groups that tended to be out on the extremes, out on the edge. And you'll recall that there was a lot of connotations associated with that kind of music for the exact reason that it oftentimes appealed, at least in some way, to more of that satanic imagery. Well, what goes around comes around. We find that once again, there are those who are going in that area. In fact, not too terribly long ago, I think it was back in April, I came across a news article. This was in a secular site, not a religious site, but a secular site that had an article that was entitled this, "Pop Artist Turning to Satanic Imagery to Drum Up Controversy and Sales, Experts Say." That's rather a lengthy title, but it describes what the article was about. The idea that once again we were finding groups and singers who were appealing to those ideas of satanic imagery to try to draw an emphasis to their music to try to get people to buy and to show interest in that. And so what we find once again is that Satan has a foothold in pop music. Just like what we saw in the 70s and 80s, those things have come back in a fairly strong way. And I think as Christians, and I think this lesson particularly applying to younger Christians who would be interested in this particular genre of music, that we need to be very aware of that. And we need to understand what's going on. And how I'd like to start out the lesson this morning is from a secular standpoint. I want you to hear from people who really don't have a lot of overt interest in religion, to listen to what they have to say. In fact, one quote that I'd like for you to hear is from Billy Johnson, who is the music editor of Yahoo Music. And so he is a man not terribly associated, again, overtly with religion, but listen to what he has to say. He says, "Many musicians make the sign of the horns gesture with their hands to celebrate rock and roll. But the gesture is widely known for mimicking devil horns. There are also many other satanic symbols like pentagrams and the number 666 that show up in more and more music videos. In the 70s and 80s, these images mainly appeared in hardcore rock and roll videos and album covers. Today, they are also more prevalent in hip-hop and R&B videos." I think this is an interesting quote because it shows somewhat of a difference from the satanic imagery of an earlier era to what we have now. I think what we're seeing now is this creeping more and more into mainstream music, into music that would be heard by a much wider audience than those groups we referenced earlier in the lesson. And certainly as we think about this, there are examples. One celebrity who has currently made waves, and I think this article was somewhat based on her music, a woman by the name of Nicki Minaj, has really gone all out into this. In a recent Grammy performance that she put on, she actually mimicked somewhat of an exorcism taking place in that. And she said that she believes that she has a demon by the name of Roman who lives within her. And I want you just to read this quote with me that's from her. She says, "His name is Roman. I had this vision for Roman. I had this vision for him to be sort of exercised. People around him tell him he's not good enough because he's not normal. And he's not blending in with the average Joe. People around him are afraid because they've never seen anything like him. Not only is he amazing, sure of himself, and confident, but he's never going to be exercised. Even when they throw the holy water on him, he rises above." Perhaps a mental evaluation might be in order for a statement like this, but nonetheless, what I want us to see is that here is someone who is celebrated. Here is a celebrity. And I'm sure a great deal of this is simply to get attention above and beyond all other celebrities. But what she's talking about is serious business. What she's talking about, and even singing about to an extent, I think, is the idea of the celebration of a demon. Someone who is associated with Satan. Now, how well does that work? Well, in her most recent album, which is entitled Pink Friday, Roman Reloaded, it debuted at number one first week, sold 250,000 copies. It worked. She got the celebration that she desired. She became the celebrity that she was wanting, but look at how she did it. She's not alone. In fact, there are several other celebrities recently who have done that. One of the more popular is a woman who goes by the name of Lady Gaga. Now, if you're wondering what a Lady Gaga is, again, if you go back earlier, she's a recycled Madonna. If you go back to the 80s, if you have to go back earlier than that, maybe a recycled Cher. She's one of these pop artists who is extreme, who is seeking to make her name known because of her antics. But now listen to what this says. And again, this is quoting from the article that I referenced earlier. It says, Lady Gaga, for example, frequently uses satanic imagery in her music videos. A simple Google search of Gaga's name yields results that suggest everything from her being a servant of the Dark Lord, which she does little to dispel, to her involvement with Illuminati, an alleged secret society of powerful musicians, CEOs, and politicians rumored to worship the devil. Similarly, Kanye West has garnered attention with controversial satanic images in his music videos. Rapper Tyler, the Creator, has even branded himself the son of Satan in one of his songs. Now, has there always been a danger in music? Yes, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later on. What I want us to draw attention to, however, is this. What we have are celebrities, not who are just kind of out there on the fringes, making you think they might somehow be associated with these kinds of things. These are people who are full force saying, I am associated with Satan. So why do we bring all of this up? Is this just another lesson to talk about the evils of music? Well, yes, if I can say with that, when it comes to the fact of Satan's celebration. And what I want us to understand primarily, though, is this. What these kinds of things do can have an impact on us. And sometimes that can happen without us even realizing what's going on. When we kid ourselves and say, these kinds of things don't bother me, we may very well find ourselves being weakened because of what we're going to talk about this morning. So with that somewhat of as our backdrop, why is this a danger? Why is this something that we need to be concerned about? Well, first of all, let me say this. There are always those who want to live on the edge. There are always those who desire to be associated with what's kind of in darkness, with what's kind of on the side of evil. In fact, let me give you just one final quote from the article. There's a lady by the name of Kelly Brady, who is a partner in a marketing and public relations company named Brandsway Creative. And this is what she said, and I think she's exactly right. She said, provocative subject matters and whatever is perceived to be forbidden intrigues the human psyche. There are those who enjoy living close to what they know is outside the limits of normal society. And so this kind of music can have an appeal to those who are already kind of trending in that direction, who are desiring to kind of be on the edge of things. But that's nothing new. In fact, I think we find in the Bible that the Lord says this will be the case. As I was kind of mulling over some of these ideas, I thought about a group that the Apostle Paul spoke with. Over in Acts chapter 17, we're told about them. It says, "And they took him and brought him to the Areopagus, saying, 'May we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting? For you bring some strange things to our ears. We wish to know, therefore, what these things mean.'" Now listen to what the commentary is on that. "Now all the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there would spend their time in nothing except telling or hearing something new." They like life on the edge. They like to hear the latest idea, the latest trend, the latest thought someone had. And I think there's an element of that within every society. But taking it even a step in more of a serious direction, I think we can consider what Paul wrote to Timothy in the first epistle, chapter 4, verse 1, when he said, "Now the Spirit expressly says that in later times some will depart from the faith by devoting themselves to deceitful spirits and teachings of demons." Now I want you to listen to that verse, and I want you to think about what we said about Nicki Minaj earlier. There are going to be those who devote themselves to deceitful spirits. Is that not exactly what we saw in that quote? She's celebrating it. She enjoys it. She thinks that somehow she's this vehicle for that kind of thing. But what we have to be very careful of is that we don't become like that. Now, why is this a danger for some? I think it's a danger because there are some who don't want to be considered normal. There's an element of society who likes to be considered abnormal. You used to could go to the mall on Friday night and you would see that, wouldn't you? A group, by their dress, by their appearance, by their actions, they were saying in very loud terms, "We are not going to be in your definition of normal." And so sometimes when someone is in that group, when someone is feeling that way, they then place themselves in very great danger of associating with the kind of music that we're talking about this morning. And so, in an effort to stand out, that may be the case. However, what I want us to understand, for most, this is not a danger. In fact, for most of us, we like being normal, don't we? We don't like standing out. We don't want to be thought different. So then what's the danger for us? Well, I think for the rest of us, the danger is that this kind of thing, as we're talking about this morning, specifically, this kind of music, lessens our seriousness about the attitude toward Satan. That when we are listening to someone sing these kinds of things, that it's causing us to take Satan a whole lot less seriously than we need to. And I don't want to speak on behalf of Satan, but from what I can find in the Scripture, I would think that would be just fine with him. Because what he knows is this: you don't fight what you don't fear. If you're not scared of something, if you're not fearful of something, you don't fight against it. And so as there is a weakening of these ideas and the idea that satanic imagery is just a part of everyday music, that it's just something I can listen to and it's no big deal, what we're doing is we're constantly wearing down that guard that we should have put up. And as we consider that, we understand that it is in opposition to things we find in the Scripture. We think about Ephesians 4:27, where Paul says, "Give no opportunity to the devil." Now I realize he's talking about a different idea than what we're talking about, but the general application is the same. We don't do anything that's going to give him a foothold in our lives. Somewhat, I think we find it going against Hebrews 12:15, where it talks about the root of bitterness that springs up and causes trouble. The imagery there is of a runner, and the runner is going along and he sees something, or doesn't see something actually, and it causes him to fall. It causes him to be tripped up. The same thing can happen here. We may say, what he's talking about this morning is no big deal. It's no real consequence. It's not going to have any influence on me. And it may very well be that it is exactly the root that's going to trip me. And so as we consider those things, I want us to understand that we often have a problem because we don't want to be viewed as those who are religiously extreme. I think this is especially true in our youth. Here is someone who enjoys this latest song, and they say, "Do you like it?" And there's a test put there. And in the desire not to be out of the mainstream, not to appear to be a religious extremist, we listen to these kinds of things because we don't want to stand out. And we need to think about that. We need to understand, as we'll talk about here in just a minute, the test that we face in that regard. When we do fall into that temptation, however, the result is we accept what is popular, even when that which is popular bows its knee to Satan. And that's a danger. That means that we are not taking Satan as nearly as serious as we need to. I want you to think about the warnings that God gives. As you look in the Bible, there is not a great deal told to us about Satan. We don't know a lot about his origins. We don't know a lot about what he is. God just simply chooses to say very few things. But in those very few things, we need to listen with sobriety to the warnings that he's given. Think about just a few of them here with me. David read this morning Genesis 3:1, which starts out the discussion on Satan. But it talks about his craftiness. Think about 2 Corinthians 2:11, so that we would not be outwitted by Satan, for we are not ignorant of his devices. Revelation 12:9, and the great dragon was thrown down, that ancient serpent who is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver. Chapter 6 of Ephesians, verse 11, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes or the wiles of the devil. 2 Timothy 2:26, that they may come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil after being captured by him to do his will. 1 Peter 5:8, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Now listen to those passages. Is Satan someone who God is saying, don't worry about it. He's not a big deal. He's not going to harm you. There's no danger there. I don't see any of that in any of these passages. In fact, every one of them is saying basically the same thing. He is out for you. He is out to destroy your soul. You better stay away. You better stand back from him. And so I would encourage, as we think about how readily apparent the devil is as our enemy, that we do nothing to take him any less seriously than what God says. But let me add something here. I think perhaps the even bigger point that we need to make is this. If I am intrigued by this kind of music imagery or any other media imagery that builds up Satan, the question for me may be, how seriously do I take God? How seriously do I listen to Him? There's a lesson I think we can gain from an Old Testament king. King Jehoshaphat, for me, has always been one of the most intriguing figures of the Old Testament. Here is a fine man who had such terrible times with his friendships. He's described as a good man, worshiping God, praying to God, but it seems whenever Ahab or his family beckoned, Jehoshaphat came running. And Jehoshaphat would often have associations that would get him in trouble, but yet he just kept on. With Ahab's son Ahaziah, Jehoshaphat went into a business deal where they made a number of ships and sent them off trading, and God didn't like it, so he wrecked them. I want you to listen to what God says to King Jehoshaphat. He sends this through one of the messengers, through a prophet by the name of Jehu. Jehu, the son of Hanani, the seer, went out to meet him and said to King Jehoshaphat, now listen to this statement, should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? You ever thought about that statement before? Here in the Old Testament, kind of buried within the divided kingdom, I believe is one of the most stark and straightforward statements any of us can ask about our associations with anything that we have in this life that has to do with wickedness, but especially when it is a blatant relationship with Satan. Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? That was the statement that was asked of Jehoshaphat. And I think it's a statement asked of us as well. So as we consider these things, if I glorify God's enemy, what does that say about my sincerity? If I am listening to the kinds of things or to the kind of people that would say, I got a demon living in me and I'm happy about that. Or I'm a servant of the dark Lord and I want everybody to know. Or I'm associated with this group of people who worship the devil and I want everybody to know. If those kinds of people are the ones whom I'm hanging around with and what I listen to, what does that say about my relationship with God? I want us to contrast those earlier thoughts that we looked at. The statement by the singers, the various things said about them. Think about that. And I want you to contrast their music with what the apostle says in Philippians chapter 4, verses 7 and 8. Here he says, "And the peace of God which surpasses all understanding will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." Now, listen specifically to this. "Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is anything excellent, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things." When I'm listening to things that glorify Satan, am I doing what the Apostle Paul is saying? Am I meditating on those kinds of things that are above, that are heavenly, that are holy? As well, I want us to understand that our life is a choice. It is a choice that we are going to make between God or Satan, and we simply cannot have it both ways. When we think about God, when we think about who He is, when we think about Satan and who he is, we've got to make a decision. We've got to make a choice of whose side we're on. We know the passage, don't we? Quite well. Matthew chapter 6, verse 24, "No one can serve two masters." Why? "For either he will hate the one and love the other, he'll cling to one, despise the other." You cannot serve God and money in this case, or God and mammon, God and Satan. You just can't do it. And so if I say that I am a Christian, but yet I am intrigued and enjoy things that are on lines with satanic imagery, then there's probably a change that I need to make in my life. And these choices are oftentimes what seem on the surface to be so insignificant. When we think about the choice between God or Satan, we oftentimes think in these grand big terms where we're standing before a firing squad and we say, "Fire, because I'm on the Lord's side." There may be a few who are in that situation, but for the majority of us, it's the everyday life decisions. Am I going to do right? Am I going to do wrong? Am I choosing God? Am I choosing Satan? These are the things that we have to consider. These are the things that we must do if we're going to take God seriously. And so as we consider that, I want you to think about what the apostle said in Galatians 2:20. He said, "I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me." The apostle didn't say he had a demon living in him, did he? He said, "Christ lives in me." That's the kind of decision that we've got to make. That's the kind of attitude we've got to have in these choices. And there should never, ever be a question in my life as to who I'm glorifying. Let me make one more note about music. I want you to understand that the lesson this morning is not to criticize all popular music. It is not to cast with a wide net over everything and every song that we listen to. In fact, if we listen to music sung only by those who love the Lord, our MP3 players would be quite empty, wouldn't they? I was discussing this with a group of teenagers not too long ago, and one young man raised his hand and he said, "Well, what kind of music can we listen to then?" Well, that's a good question. And I think it's one, no matter what age we are, we've got to answer and we've got to say, it's at least got to be neutral. It's at least got to be songs that do nothing to glorify, first of all, Satan, or to glorify wicked thoughts. It's got to be the kind of music where no one can say to us, "Really, you're a Christian and you listen to that? You're good with that?" If that's the case, then we must get rid of what we're listening to and change it. Because I want you to understand that what this lesson is talking about is the encouragement of discernment. The idea that whether we are 15 or older, that when we put something before us, whether it be music or whether it be video or whatever, that we are discerning and we're saying, based on my values as a Christian, I can or cannot accept that. And I'm willing to take whatever repercussions that means, even if it means that people are going to call me a Bible beater, even if it means people are going to think I'm some kind of oddball. I'm going to do it because I'm on the Lord's side. Let me say this as well. We need to understand the power of musical influence. Do you think it's any accident that God chose singing as a way of worship to Him? You ever thought about that? Of all the things God could have chosen, one of the biggest things that He chose was the idea of singing. And you look from the time of Israel to the present, how much emphasis is placed on that. And that's because there's power in it. Singing is a way that helps us remember. It's a way of ingraining thoughts in our head. We know that even from childhood when we're trying to memorize something. And so some really good teacher comes up with a little musical melody and puts with it. And probably, you know, you're 60, 70 years old, you can still remember it, can't you? Can't say the books of the Bible, but you can sing them, can't you? You know your ABCs, you might have to sing them out, but you can get them. What did God do? He said, "I'm going to ingrain in you righteousness by that." And even in a secular way. Think about how many times protest songs are written. Songs that go along with praising or lauding someone. What we need to realize is that what we put in our ears goes straight through to the brain. And there it's going to stay. And it's going to be remembered. So music can be both good, wonderful, and it can be detrimental as well. Let me make one more point here. And this, I think, primarily to our younger Christians who are in the audience. Privacy does not give bad lyrics acceptability. We live in a generation now where you can be more private with your music than ever before. Rarely anymore do you hear parents saying, "Turn that thing down." Because that thing is now about this big with earplugs attached to it that you put in your ears and nobody knows but you what's going in. That puts a lot of responsibility on you. That means that that influence of the parents, unless they are doing a constant check of that player to see what the song list is, you've got a lot of responsibility on your own. And you've got to say, no matter if anybody else hears this or not, I'm hearing it. And I realize the influence that it can have. Remember what the writer of Ecclesiastes said? "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment." The choices that we make, even early on, are subject to the judgment of God. I'm going to say this too. I said it's harder in a lot of ways now. It's also easier in a lot of ways now. There is greater selection of the songs that you can choose than ever before. Saw a little cartoon in the paper the other day, kind of offended me a little bit, but it was right. These kids came up and said, "Granddad, tell us about the old days when you had to buy the entire album to get the song that you wanted." You know, you used to have to buy the whole thing and listen to all of it. Now you can pick and choose those songs. Well, let me tell you, pick and choose the ones that are right. The ones that are not glorifying, especially these things that we've talked about today. Let's make a point, no matter what our age, to take heed and to never think that God doesn't hear what we're hearing. So what's our point in all of this? Our point is this: Satan wants nothing good for us. There is nothing that he desires of any good for you and I. He's bent on our eternal destruction. Why then would we do anything to glorify him? Why would we do anything, whether it be the music or the things we look at or the things that we think, to praise and honor the one who's trying to destroy our eternal soul? Much more, why are we not spending more time praising the one who is bent on our eternal salvation, who has done everything he can so that we can be saved? And our choice in that is going to be seen in the kinds of things that we choose in this life. This morning, maybe you're ready to make that choice. We've not really focused on first principles as such, but yet we focused on the whole idea of salvation. It's a choice. It's the choice of whether or not you're going to glorify God, of whether or not he's going to be the one who is the one you want to serve. Make that choice known this morning in the right way. If you're not a Christian, come forward. If you understand that being baptized means that your sins will be washed away, you're forgiven, ready to start a new life, it's time. Don't put it off. Or if you've done things that you would like for us to pray with you about, this congregation, these brethren will be glad to do that this morning. Whatever it takes, let's every one of us make sure that we are on God's side, and there is no one who can cast any shadow of doubt on that. You need to respond. Won't you come as we stand and sing together?